Welcome to the KMUD News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. In this episode, we have stories on the Milepost 18 blaze in Hoopa Valley and on a project to document and research Humboldt's legacy cannabis strains. But first, some local alerts and updates. This is KMUD News. Starting off with a tragedy from this weekend's Humboldt County Fair. It was previously reported that two horses broke their legs during Saturday activities at the Humboldt County Fair. KMUD News obtained statements from the Humboldt County Fair Association and Flying U Rodeo, who operated the rodeo at the fairgrounds this past weekend. We'll start with the statement from Flying U Rodeo. On Saturday, August 15th, at the rodeo held in Ferndale, a saddle bronc horse was injured after the competition had ended and the rider had dismounted. The horse was immediately taken out of the arena for treatment by an on-site veterinarian. There was a second horse that also sustained injury during the same event. Professional rodeo personnel followed all protocols and secured the second horse for examination and treatment by the on-site veterinarian. We are saddened to share that after being evaluated by veterinarians, it was determined that both rodeo horse athletes sustained injuries as such that they had to be humanely euthanized. The rodeo producers and Flying U Rodeo Company take the treatment and care of all livestock athletes seriously. Livestock welfare is of the highest priority to the Humboldt County Fair Association, the rodeo producers, and Flying U Rodeo Company. There are numerous safeguards and provisions that are in place to ensure the safety of the human and animal athletes competing in the sport of professional rodeo, end quote. That statement from Flying U Rodeo on the injured and later euthanized horses at this past weekend's Humboldt County Fair was followed by a statement from the Humboldt County Fair Association, which reads, quote, "The Humboldt County Fair Association is deeply saddened by the loss of two equine athletes following injuries sustained during Saturday evening's rodeo at the Humboldt County Fair. We recognize how difficult an incident like this is for everyone involved, including the animals' owners and handlers, the rodeo professionals who work alongside these animals, fair staff and volunteers, and members of our community who witnessed the events. The health, safety, and humane treatment of all animals participating in events at the Humboldt County Fairgrounds are extremely important to the Humboldt County Fair Association. We expect all event partners and contractors to maintain appropriate animal welfare practices and to have qualified veterinary care available when livestock are participating in events. Those protocols were in place and followed during Saturday evening's rodeo, including the immediate response of an on-site veterinarian. Since Saturday evening, Fair Administration has remained in communication with the rodeo producers and Flying U Rodeo Company regarding the incidents and the response that followed. Flying U Rodeo Company has issued a statement regarding the injuries, veterinary response, and the loss of two horses. The Humboldt County Fair Association will continue working with our rodeo partners to reinforce our shared commitment to the welfare and safety of all animals participating in events at the Humboldt County Fairgrounds. We extend our sincere sympathy to those who cared for and worked with these horses and to everyone affected by their loss," end quote. The deaths of two horses this year echo a tragedy from 2024, where two injured horses at the Humboldt Fairgrounds also had to be euthanized. The deaths during the 2024 fair were from horse racing, which has since been removed from the event. This year's horse deaths at the Humboldt County Fair were the result of injuries from rodeo activities and not horse racing. Over the weekend in Garberville, there was a small brush fire named the Redwood Fire near Garberville around the intersection of Redwood Drive and Alder Point Road, first reported around 10:30 a.m. on Sunday, August 16th. Forward progress was quickly stopped with response from CAL FIRE, CHP, Garberville Fire District, Redway Fire, and a Bryceland water tender. Also in Garberville news, The Saturday morning Creative Space Art Group from the Garberville Library took the Best in Show ribbon for their trash art piece at the Humboldt County Fair in Ferndale over the weekend. This was a collaborative effort put together by Joanne Wilson, Marcy Ebert, Charlotte Peters, Cinda McGee, and Ellie Huber. The piece was entitled From the Storm Drain to the Sea and featured a number of sea creatures all constructed from discarded trash. This 3D sculpture can be viewed during regular open hours at the Garberville Library. While you're at the library, be sure to pick up your tiny art canvas for the SoHum Tiny Art Show, which will be opening September 1st in the Art Lobby. And up next, our main stories. This is KMUD News. We have updates on the Milepost 18 fire and regional air quality. KMUD News reports. The Milepost 18 fire in Hoopa Valley has now been burning for over a week. As of this broadcast recording, during the afternoon of August 17th, the fire is approximately 6,557 acres with 19% containment. Personnel have continued to arrive in order to assist, and there are now over 1,700 firefighters and other emergency personnel attending to the MP18 situation. The fire has caused other impacts, particularly poor air quality across parts of Humboldt and Trinity counties. KMUD News spoke with Matthew Kidwell, meteorologist for the National Weather Service in Eureka, to learn more about smoke impacts and the forecast for smoke later this week.
It does look like there's northerly winds off the coast. They're likely bringing some down. It certainly could be coming from the fires in Oregon and Washington. There's a lot of smoke being output up there. And then smoke from the fire near Hoopa is generally more going towards Trinity County and not as much out towards down towards southern Humboldt. It looks like by Tuesday, especially Tuesday afternoon, it's probably going to improve a little bit as the winds get a bit more of a westerly turn to them and start and don't bring as much smoke down from due north. So it looks like, yeah, it should be improving Tuesday night. But it might be sticking around until through maybe Tuesday morning.
Hopefully good news on smoke impact for many across Humboldt County if the forecast holds. Of course, in the immediate area around Hoopa, smoke will continue to cause unhealthy air pollution. We also spoke again with Edward Dula, information officer with the Interagency California One team currently in charge of fire operations for the MP18 blaze. Edward began by detailing current fire operations, including a large amount of prep work to ensure that those in Hoopa will remain safe if the situation changes.
Yesterday and last night, we really put the last bit of work into some firing operations on the northern part of the fire near Highway 96, the Skunk Creek, Coyote Creek area. That continues to fill in that area with some good understory burn, which will really help us out if any kind of squirrely winds along the river try to push the fire out of there. We've already reduced the fuels ahead of it with this firing operation. On the south end, Big Hill Ridge, we continue to bring fire, straight to our lines with drip torches. We got a bunch of hot shot crews recently coming in to help us with that project ahead of some hotter, drier weather that's coming in a few days. The crews are they're making their way east from about Big Hill Lookout. They've got some dozer line and hand line that goes east and kind of curves up back north to try to make a catcher's mitt, if you will, for that southeast portion of the fire should it decide to get active and try to run uphill. We've got a plan in place for that. And then further out, big picture, all around essentially all around the fire, there's contingency lines going in just in case Long Hill, I think it's called Long Ridge Road to the east, some area south of which PAC already have some good contingency lines in place. But our main priority right now is protect Hoopa, which those hand lines of Mill Creek are holding really well so far. So we're pretty pleased with those. Priority two is to keep it on the north side of Big Hill Ridge, because we really don't want it getting onto that other side, the Hostler Creek area. So we're doing all we can to keep it from getting in there.
And then are you folks still expecting more personnel to come in? I noticed the number was up to over 1,700 this morning.
With California not being too busy with other fires, there's just some resources that are available that will help us get this thing wrapped up before the hot, dry weather. And so resources continue to arrive. And they're always kind of timing out, as well as not everyone can do a full 14. We kind of lend and lease and borrow and barter with other incidents to get specialized equipment or crews when a situation demands it.
We will continue to keep KMUD listeners updated on the ongoing Milepost 18 fire in Hoopa Valley. There are still evacuation orders and warnings in the area. You can check the Watch Duty app or call Humboldt OES at 707-268-2500 for more information on current evacuation warnings and orders. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. The group Humboldt Grace has recently published research on the legacy cannabis cultivar Skunk One, KMUD News reports. Humboldt Grace, a Dreammaker project of the Inc. People 501c3, recently released research on the cannabis strain Skunk One as part of its Humboldt Legacy project. KMUD News spoke with project founder Lelania Dubois, also known as Lele, to learn more about what led to Humboldt Grace diving deep into the legacy cannabis genetics of the Emerald Triangle. Lele spoke first of an experience nearly 30 years ago that led to a better understanding of the impact of cannabis genetics, especially on medical patients.
In 1999, I was in nursing school and I suffered a traumatic spinal cord injury that put me in a wheelchair for a while and put me in a position where the surgeons told me I would never walk again. As a nurse, I loved Western medicine. I thought science was the answer to everything because it made me feel safe and it gave me answers. And through my injury, I really quickly was learning how a lot of those Western medicines were killing me and not healing me, and that I needed to go back to the ways that my mom taught me and the community taught me in Burnt Ranch, which was really alternative healing, homemade medicines. And cannabis, weed or herb that we called it back then, was a part of that. And I started using cannabis with intention. I very rarely was into it to party or recreate in my life because I was so ashamed of it. So when I started using it with intention, I got very sick off of some weed. I threw up for 3 days, and it turned out that grower used Miracle-Gro. And that taught me really fast that, oh, wow, you can't just go get your weed. We didn't have dispensaries then yet. We had 215, I think it was 215, the first one, but we didn't have like a dispensary. And so then I started learning, I started buying from one friend because I knew it was clean. Then I started growing, and I was in a wheelchair a lot of the time, so I couldn't grow like everybody else. So I started growing vertically. And that showed me that I couldn't grow the same plant as the other person. And when I started growing my own medicine, I grew a couple plants that made me ill. And I didn't understand that. How could that make me ill? And that was about 30 years ago. And I started really understanding that that genetic makeup, that chemical makeup, that end product, and the way it grew really impacted whether I had enough medicine or not.
Lele Dubois of Humboldt Grace spoke of the balance between modern-day genetics and the proven backbone of legacy cannabis genetics and the history behind those genetics.
What particularly gave the Emerald Triangle value in this conversation is that we were innovators and creators. So I think if we stop innovation and creation, that's not good. But I think it needs to be done with intelligence, right? Like, what are you crossing? Where did you get that? Look at it. Like, what are you spreading, right? Like, do it with intelligence. Do it with understanding. But limiting, I think, folks on that creative, I mean, we'll never find a Picasso. We'll never find the cure for cancer if we limit ourselves. However, I do feel as not just in the Emerald Triangle, but I think in cultures that have stewarded this plant all over the world, and I don't just think this, I gotten to work with some amazing scientists that have been proving this, is that where Colombian gold came from, what made it so great is because it grew for the people in that culture, and the land provided what was needed. And so where we in the Emerald Triangle have so much value to the entire industry and the world around this is not because, you know, we colonized weed, really, is what we did in the Emerald Triangle. But we have this immense, diverse ecosystem that's very rare and that has allowed us to take this plant and push it and play with it and change it in such a small community.
Lele then spoke on what led Humboldt Grace to selecting Skunk One for the Humboldt Legacy Project.
When I had no idea what Skunk One was, I grew up in Burnt Ranch. I didn't even know what 420 was until 2014 was my first Emerald Cup. And so fortunately, I get to play with way smarter people than me and someone that a lot of people will know in this community. His name's Marty Yip. He owns a great nutrient company called Sensational Solutions. He goes, Lele, I'm going to give you two of these Skunk One selections. I'd never heard of Skunk One in my life. I only knew what skunky weed was because it was everywhere we were at when I was a kid. So he donated them, and immediately it was like, well, these are two different seeds. We didn't, and we needed to put them into canopy right. And so we had to make them different because they were two physically different things. And then when we went to medicinal genomics, the DNA showed us that they were different, showed us they were related, but it showed us they were also very different. So we named HLP is the Humboldt Legacy Project. Humboldt Grace is a dream maker of the Inc. people. So that's how we work through our nonprofit mission. And then the Humboldt Legacy Project is an initiative that we started in 2020 to seek pathways to protect, preserve, and to protect, authenticate, and give value to the plants and the people and the culture. What made it make this project 100 times better than if it was something else is that it has been licensed. It has made a drug in the marketplace. It was DNA fingerprinted in 2012. What David Watson did with the Skunk One was a lot of what we wanted to teach the community. And I think Marty knew that. I didn't know that, but I think he knew that. And so we were able to cross-reference the selections that we had with the selection that David Watson donated to the Wieblin study in 2012 and say, oh yeah, these have some of the same markers. We can't say 1,000% for sure. I think what Kevin McKernan said was around 90% sure, because first of all, in 2012, they weren't able to map cannabis the way they are now, right? So there's so many different variables that you just can't begin to, but we can see that there were some, there was, I believe, one or two significant variants that showed up in the Wieblin study as well, enough for the gentleman who mapped the cannabis genome and whose father was a part of the Human Genome Project to say that it was 90% certain part of the skunk lineage. It is not a skunk one, because the plant doesn't really work that way, right? We're learning. But it is part of that lineage.
Lele Dubois also spoke on the uniqueness of Skunk One and ingenuity behind many legacy strains, along with the importance of landrace strains that existed long before Humboldt's cannabis industry.
The other part of heritage, so it's the stabilization of it, you know, what it's been through, what you know about it, you know, usually it's been worked really hard, et cetera, et cetera. But the other part of that is that all these names are attached to different plants. Like even every person you probably ask about a skunk one is going to give you a totally different flavor profile and experience. And skunk one was bred to remove the skunky flavor. It smell. They were trying to get rid of the smell because we were moving indoors because of camp and we didn't have, you know, the can fans, what are they called? The carbon filters. And so they were trying to get rid of the smell. And so it's funny, right? Like, so that's a whole thing in itself. But the land races are really important, just the same way keeping the seeds in Africa and all of those things are really important because of their stabilization, and they're the parents. So you can build healthy things off of them, right? They're not a bunch of mongrels.
The full report on Skunk One from the Humboldt Legacy Project is available to anyone willing to fill out an online waiver.
We've created a waiver system. Just fill it out and I'll send you a copy of the full report. It's a 64-page report. There's also a data workbook that I'm not sending with it because it's so much. But if you want it, you just reach back out and I'll send it to you. But we hope anyone will go and apply for that waiver. And what the waiver does is it gives us numbers, and it gives us numbers so that we can go apply for a grant, or we could show someone who's interested in the project that, you know, so many people actually got the waiver. So it's community dollars, basically, is what you're giving us by filling out those waivers, and we greatly appreciate it.
You can apply for the waiver and to access the Skunk One report at humboldtgrace.org. The report includes some very interesting data on this cultivar. That includes large-scale differences in expression per growing site, including terpene expression and highly variable THC percentages, along with cannabinoids like CBC or cannabichromene that are only expressed on specific grow sites. The research illustrates terroir expression through growing Skunk One in different microclimates around the Emerald Triangle. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. The issue of truth in advertising when it comes to recycled plastic is getting more attention at the state and federal levels. Suzanne Potter reports.
The issue of truth in advertising when it comes to recycled plastic is getting more attention at the state and federal levels. Assembly Bill 2253, now before the state Senate, would ban certain accounting methods used to establish what counts as recycled content in plastic consumer goods. Kayla Robinson with the nonprofit Californians Against Waste says right now products are claiming a certain percentage of recycled content, even if the final product is 100% virgin plastic.
AB2253 will ensure that consumers can trust the product labels and actually bring back legitimacy to recycled content claims so that they mean what consumers think that they mean.
Robinson says petrochemical companies use a method called mass balance, which counts recycled materials used at all stages of complex manufacturing, even if the final product contains no recycled plastic. In a letter of opposition, a coalition that includes chemical and manufacturing groups argues that these methods are well established and necessary to track recycled content. Kirsty Petchy with the nonprofit Just Zero says companies also break down used plastic into its constituent parts and call it chemical recycling.
It is counting breaking down plastic and burning it towards recycling numbers, counting it as recycling, even though no plastic is actually being recycled into new plastic packaging.
Congress is also looking into the issue. A recent hearing in the U.S. House looked at the Recycled Materials Attribution Act, which would broaden the definition of recycling to include chemical recycling. Alternatively, California Senator Adam Schiff just introduced the Tracking Plastic Act to address mislabeling and verify the origins of recycled plastic content. Petchy says society needs to move beyond plastic altogether.
We have to stop pretending or even have our goal to recycle plastic. We have to abandon plastic recycling entirely and move towards reusable materials instead that we can refill and actually recycle.
For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
That's all for our news broadcasts. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Bianna Federico, Michael McCaskill, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. KMUD News is now on streaming platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Are there stories we're missing or that you're curious about? You can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmod.org. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyut, Wilcutt, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.